This is Purple Radio on demand.
Welcome back to the wonderful world of Chalkboard Ultra. I'm Sam, and joining me here, as usual, is...
Louis!
Woo!
Yes, I'm back.
And I'm happy for you. Now, in this week's episode, we are focusing on space. But not just our astronomical planet, stars, aliens, space, but our general three-dimensional view of space and the kind of the structure and geometry of the physical world around us.
What exactly will we be going into, Sam?
We're going to start off talking about the standard model of particle physics, seeing how we can relate all of the fundamental forces in the universe, and then a trip into the fourth dimension, which I hope is very, very exciting.
That sounds cool. Let's get on with the episode and see what lies hidden in higher dimensions.
A huge research area of physics and many other areas of applied science is this search for a theory of everything.
Wasn't that a book by Stephen Hawking?
Yeah, it was a good read too.
Well, before we turn this into Chalkboard Ultra book reviews, let's ask what this research focuses on.
This field is looking for a unified way to describe all of the matter and fundamental forces that make up our universe, with a heavy focus on the forces, those being the electromagnetic force, strong force, weak force, and gravity.
Yes, I remember them from A-level, the short answer to what everything is made of. I imagine that would be particles. But how do we arrive at this conclusion?
Well, I might start by asking you what you are made of, and stripping away all unnecessary factors, we could say that you are mostly water. But then, what is water made of?
As said before, I'm not a chemist, but I recall water is H2O, or hydrogen and some oxygen atoms.
But what are the atoms themselves made of? See, studying further leads you to talk about protons, neutrons, electrons, but even then that's not the full picture. Protons themselves are made of smaller particles called quarks.
So all of matter is particles, got it. There must be a huge number of these particles then, you know, floating around so they can create everything we can see, surely.
Well, it's surprisingly not as many of you as you think, if you think of distinct particles. We've got matter particles, which are called fermions, and they're categorized into different flavors of quarks and leptons. Everyone's favorite protons and neutrons are composed of different quarks, while the electron is a type of lepton.
Apologies in advance for the jargon.
Yeah.
That's not the full story, though. Something must be holding all this matter together, which I suppose are the fundamental forces, and I assume, is that what electromagnetism is all about?
Electromagnetism. Arguably the single most important force on our kind of human experience level. It's the force that binds positive and negative charges together, essentially what makes a hydrogen atom the hydrogen atom. But it also describes repulsion of like charges, and in particular the electrons. I mean, it's the reason you can't walk through walls or fall through the surface of the Earth. The electrons of our body and other boundaries are repelled by the electromagnetic force.
Another one of these forces is the strong nuclear force. This force, for example, holds quarks extremely close together, so close that they're almost glued to each other very, very tightly.
But here's the twist. Forces aren't exactly forces. They are also really small particles.
Next thing you're going to say, that they're not really particles as well. Well, and they're not really spinning. I think I know where this is heading.
We're not on quantum field theory just yet, don't worry.
Very well, but we can at least say at the quantum level that the forces are also made of particles?
Yeah, it's strange but true. Think back to this electromagnetic force between a proton and an electron. This is caused by lots of smaller particles called photons flying back and forth. You might have heard of them as the carriers of light, but they just carry the electromagnetic force. And the same goes for the strong force you're talking about. It's the emission and absorption of even smaller particles called gluons. And by combining all of the known particles, which are the fermions for matter and bosons for forces, we can obtain the standard model of particle physics, which is, in my eyes, the greatest feat of physics in the 20th century.
So everything around us is just made of these fundamental particles arranged in different ways. Well, that sounds pretty cool.
Oh, and I'm glad. Did you like my use of the word flavour? You didn't really flinch at that one. I thought you would.
Well, I think that does ring a bell. I don't know whether to go up on that or down.
Quite strange.
Very strange.
But something is missing from the standard model. And this is why the field still has a lot of active research in going into it. The standard model does not account for, can you guess it?
Gravity?
Gravity. And it does frustrate a lot of physicists.
Gravity is sometimes known as the weakest force. Think about it. Even though we're bound to the surface of the Earth, we can still jump up and down and defy gravity. It also interacts with everything, as well as humans and other earthly objects. We have planets and stars being affected too.
And I should mention that gravity also affects all of our fundamental particles.
Can we just say it is like the other force particles, the bosons then? I've heard about the graviton before, a rather elusive little particle.
You can try as hard as you like to find this graviton, but even with some of our best quantum field theories, at least, it simply cannot exist. If such a particle did exist, the action of gravity would be caused by the movement of gravitons moving between quarks and such, for example. But the gravitons themselves are particles, so there must be gravitons between those gravitons causing them to feel gravity. And then you'll need gravitons between those gravitons, and, you know, fairly quickly you can see that they can't possibly exist. We've got too many gravitons over a short distance, and therefore there's a problem of infinite density.
Well, perhaps then there's no real way to describe gravity at the quantum level. We can be satisfied with what Einstein proposed with relativity, so I think I've got less to worry about.
Or we could go in the physicist direction and try to come up with a different theory that might explain a connection, a unification.
You mean a grand unification, Sam?
These are the treacherous depths of string theory.
I heard it's rather abstract. So it's the idea that everything is made of strings, or is it just a massive oversimplification?
Well, I think an oversimplification is what we need, because it is mathematically and physically an extremely challenging topic. I mean, there's a reason they only allow it as a fourth year module.
All right, so how do you see it then?
The idea behind string theory is to imagine that everything that looks like a particle is actually just a tiny, tiny loop of string, like a rubber band, perhaps. All of the different kinds of particles, both fermions and bosons, are just different ways that a string can vibrate.
So, for instance, clockwise, stretched, compressed, maybe wobbling in a circular sine pattern.
Yeah, and interestingly, it was discovered by accident. In 1968, Gabriel Veneziano was trying to find equations that would describe the movement and predictions of the strong force, you know, the gluons that we mentioned earlier. But these equations ended up describing scattering patterns of strings. And although it wasn't until 2000 that it was actually considered an actual theory.
So does string theory help to explain the graviton?
Well, yes. One of these types of vibrations is said to be this graviton, and it therefore solves the idea of quantum gravity and thus a theory of everything.
Hold on. But what about the idea that there are too many strings being between each other?
There is nothing in the universe smaller than the string. And so we don't have the infinite density problem we were left with before.
Okay, how small are we talking?
Brace yourselves. If you take a hydrogen atom, one proton and one electron, and you scale it up to the size of our observable universe, one of these strings will be about a meter in diameter. Unfathomably small.
Well, you did say that physics was all about perspective, Sam.
And my favourite part about it is that there are no issues at all. The math checks out, and so from my point of view, it's a complete theory, and I'm more than happy to accept it.
My understanding is that there's a big debate in particle physics as to whether it's actually feasible.
And unfortunately, you're right. It's because of one huge physical caveat. Even the simplest of these string theories only makes sense in 11 dimensions.
11? And here's me thinking that 3 was enough.
Well, yeah, the 3 spatial dimensions we currently live in, time as a temporal dimension, and 7 other space dimensions all curled up in a weird and wacky way so that we can't see or perceive them. But we do have to be very careful. One of the questions being heavily studied right now is which sense of curling creates the fermions and bosons as we know them today.
I think you're just being silly. How on Earth, how in the universe, can there be 11 dimensions? What would it even look like?
Fear not. I'll try and settle it for you. As a bit of an abstraction, I want to take you and the listeners into the fourth dimension, spiritually, mentally, emotionally.
But not physically.
Not that far. I am sadly limited by the technology of my time.
I'm starting to think that when an abstraction is to be done, a physicist's lot is not a happy one. All right, how can we transcend through this dimension then? What does the fourth dimension look like?
We've got to build from the ground up, or more appropriately, dimension by dimension. I've got my trusty paper and mechanical pencil.
Oh dear.
Let's start with the zeroth dimension right here, and I've just drawn a point on the piece of paper. This is Point Plaza, and unfortunately, it's not that exciting. There just exists a single point, us, that cannot move in any direction because there is no direction. We just exist on that point, not seeing or moving anything for all eternity.
That sounds horrific, but it's not real. Right.
Not as far as I'm aware. As I said, it's wacky. So we'll just move up to the one-dimensional case, which in my, you know, my experience is is the best of all dimensions.
Why exactly?
It's the only space where physicists can really get an intuition for their ideas. A lot of differential equations can be studied in the 1D case to gain some geometric knowledge of the solution before attempting to solve it for higher dimensions. Anyway, that's like a little aside.
Oh, you and your differential equations. When will you stop?
Well, you know me. I'm always partial to a DE.
On the contrary, your desire to spread DEs is something periodic, again and again. Many times you promoted DEs to a point of excess.
Okay, maybe I did overstep a boundary.
So I take it instead of saying Neumann, you'll be saying no man?
We shall see. So anyhow, in this 1D place that I call Line World, we can now move along one single line. I've just drawn it right here. You can move along a single line, left and right. You can think about it as a slider on a paper guillotine. One thing I should point out is that when we move along this slider, if Point Plaza lives somewhere in Line World, then we can see it from either side. And more interestingly, we can quite easily cross through it. Why? Because the entire dimension is contained as a single point on the line.
Could someone in Point Plaza see whenever this happens, though?
When we move through?
Yes.
Well, let's say we have a line segment on our line that we can kind of remote control and move anywhere we like, as long as it slides along the line. So you can think that actual grip you use to move the paper guillotine, you'll be able to slide it left and right. If we move this line segment or handle over the point where Point Plaza is located, what do you think someone living there might see?
I dislike your continued use of weird notation, but let's run with it. Since the point man in Point Plaza doesn't understand direction, nothing can move nowhere, and so it would seem like a dark point appears for a certain amount of time and then just disappears.
I like it. So the point man in Point Plaza, they would observe a point appearing and disappearing as if out of thin air. We, however, in Line World, one dimension higher, know that we have just simply moved our line segment along the line. All right, now suppose we are beings in 2D space.
Hang on, I think I recognize this. Is this Flatland?
How did you know?
There's a book about this, written by Edwin Abbott Abbott, called Flatland, a lovely piece of mathematical fiction. Written from the viewpoint of a square, it details the strange life of those living in the second dimension, as well as his visits to other dimensions. Now, the book is mainly a critique of Victorian attitudes to hierarchy. However, its discussion of dimensions is what really interests us mathematicians.
I thought this wasn't Chobot Ultra book reviews.
How the turntables.
Well, yeah, what you're saying is exactly the situation that we have here. So if we think like a square, we can now move in two directions.
It's hip to be a square.
Well, we can now move in two directions, left, right, and up and down, which I'll draw an extra axis on. That's true. If you plot everywhere we can move in this 2D space, it traces out a plane. The way we move around is a bit like in Snake, if you've ever played that.
No.
Never played Snake?
No.
Did you not grow up with like a Nokia brick?
No.
No?
No.
Well, it's the mobile game where there's a keypad and you press the up, down, left and right arrows to move like a snake on a board. I can't believe I'm having to explain this to you. Louis's looking it up right now. You can play Snake on Google. Do it right now.
Nah.
Well, we live on this plane, like a bit of a coordinate plane on graph paper. Now, as before, the entirety of Line World lives inside of Flatland, and it's like having drawn the x-axis on this graph paper. And again, anyone living in Flatland can easily cross over this line.
That probably looks like a being appearing out of thin air again. Of course, it isn't magic or godlike powers. It's just traversing dimensions.
And exactly. And it gets more interesting if we send a 2D object over this boundary. You know, let's say a disc. I'll draw it over and... There we go. If we slide a disc along our plane and through the boundary of Line World, think about what a hypothetical line lady would see.
Would it just be a point in this case? Or something a bit more... bigger.
Yeah, a bit bigger. If you move a disc through the line, it would appear to Line Lady as if a point appears, grows into a line segment until we reach the maximum width of a disc, and shrinks back to a single point, it disappears again. Like if you had a line camera pointed over your DVD player as you inserted a disc into it, it would kind of grow into a long line and shrink again.
Okay, I like that analogy. What you're saying is if we send a 2D object through a 1D world, any 1D observer would see the object as a line, growing, shrinking, in and out of existence.
And that was the case when going from 1D to zero dimensions. We sent through a line segment, which is a 1D object, and it appeared to Point Man in Point Plaza as a zero-dimensional object, which is just a point. Yes, technically it grew and shrunk, but Point Man doesn't have any notions of distance and can only measure time.
Such a sad world.
Well, let's head back to reality where Louis and I are once again three-dimensional beings. We now have three directions to move in. Left, right, up, down, and forward and backwards. So can you see where this is going?
As 3D beings, we can see all of 2D flatland at once. Now, if it was permeable, we could probably cross through it. And like before, any flatland fellow living there would just see us appearing and disappearing.
It's all the same story. If we take a 3D object, like a ball, and pass it through the flatland, it would appear to the flatland fellow that a disc, a 2D object, would simply appear, grow until it reaches the maximum width of the ball, shrink, and then vanish from existence. Okay, it's time. Now for the fourth dimension, which we can't physically comprehend, so I have to turn to the hyper-beings of the fourth dimension who move in four directions. Left, right, up, down, forward, backwards, and inside and out.
Ugh, what does that even mean?
Well, you have to think like the lower dimensional observers that we are. Our perception of 3D space is contained entirely within the 4D hyperspace, just like with all the other cases. If one of these hyper-beings were to go lower dimension traversing, it would seem as if they appear out of thin air in front of us and then disappear with no trace.
And the same for a hyperball.
Well, if the hyper-being in hyperspace sends through their hyperball to us feeble 3D people, it would look like a ball that appears out of nowhere in front of our eyes, growing into existence until the hyperdiameter is reached, then shrinking back down again and finally vanishing.
I thought you said this was going to be easy.
It is very mind-boggling. Just you wait till you hear about the 5D case.
Oh, no. I'm full.
And there you have it. You have now learned of the hyper-beings that live in hyperspace, playing hyper-football and hyper-rugby for their teams in the Hyper-Super League.
I can't see Sportsfeed covering that.
As with a lot of theories in physics, it's one thing to come up with the theory, but something else entirely to actually show some experimental evidence for it.
All right, so what is the experimental evidence of string theory then?
None.
What?
None.
Sam, I can't hear you.
Fine, there's no evidence for string theory. Are you happy?
Happy? Sam, we've gone through the origins, the abstract thought, and now we've traversed dimensions, and now you're telling me that there's no evidence for it. None.
Well, yes. Sadly, the maths checks out, but the physics does not. So 1-0 to us, I suppose. But that hasn't stopped people from trying.
I mean, one thing that gets me is, how can we relate this to the real world, if proven true? I mean, would this be taught at A-level physics? You know, new understanding of the world around us. It would seem very neglectful not to explain this brand new experience of physics and what exactly the world is.
You're right. It does remind me of something my dad asked me about, because I told him that I'm interested in doing science research in some way. And I told him little bits of string theory, because it's because the standard model and general relativity, we're happy like to the 99.99% of it. We can unify these theories up to the Planck length, which is all well and good. So what is the need for doing this extra little bit? He seemed very, very confused at like why we need to know the extra bit, because it isn't really going to change our views of the world, but it does help us give a nice mathematical structure.
So you're saying it won't necessarily change the course of human lives, but probably be cool for STEM.
No, yeah, a huge, huge advancement in the way that we problem solve, I suppose. But it's not something that should be rushed. It's been said that the development of string theory is just a desperate attempt to try and make something fit. You know, to grab gravity and the standard model, just glue them together in any way possible and hope they stay stuck together long enough to get this grand unification you speak of.
I feel that. I mean, it gets me thinking of statistical mechanics as well, because you've got the quantum level stuff combined with probability, and it sure seems nice, but is it really a thing? I mean, we discussed Brownian motions before, didn't we?
No, it's true. It could come into play, but, you know, there is something for everyone. Lewis, it's your line.
Oh, sorry. I was just stunned through all of that. The lies. You told me we were going to explain everything. You said you had the answer to life, the universe, and everything. I think that's a bit unoriginal. But come on, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, after studying maths and a lot of physics, I've realized how much I actually don't know. So I apologize for getting you stuck in all of that mess.
And you're going to apologize to the listeners as well?
Absolutely not. They want to hear it.
I think after a journey into the fourth dimension, we should reconcile and relax back into the third. Everything's safe, and we don't need to worry about the hyper beings haunting me in my sleep.
Oh, I wouldn't count yourself so lucky. They're everywhere.
Please stop.
I really do hope you've enjoyed this experimental episode of Chalkboard Ultra. A little out of some's comfort zone, I'm sure, but hey, we're still figuring out what works.
Please join us next time as we delve deeper into the wonders of mathematics. If you head over to our Instagram, at Chalkboard Ultra, we have lots of content there for you to engage in, and maybe leave us some feedback.
Keep safe from the hyper beings, and keep well.
Well, that was a very good session, I think, for all in the studio. Me, you, Richard.
Where's Richard?
I don't know. Seems to have disappeared.
What? Out of existence?
No. None of this, Sam.
No, I wouldn't worry about it. Strange, though. As I say, it was an experimental episode. Somewhat experimental in that a lot of thought-provoking stuff. I don't know if the pseudo-visuals helped. What do you think?
Well, I think it's good to actually understand from a base level what string theory is trying to suggest, and the whole dimensional analysis and all that. But as I said, when an abstraction is to be done, a physicist's lot is not a happy one. What exactly do physicists like then?
We prefer representations.
Right, that makes more sense.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of representation theory because it's very, very mathematically complex. It tries to unify group theory to some physical concepts, which I'm currently studying at the minute. The geometry of mathematical physics, or GOMP, as we like to call us. GOMP, GOMP. You're like, womp, womp.
Oh.
GOMP, GOMP. No, the geometry of mathematical physics is difficult. It's just using matrix algebra to solve some problems. It actually what led us to predict the Higgs boson. Famously, the Higgs boson is a particle, it's a spin zero particle for those interested. And it was predicted in some theories in the late 20th century, but it wasn't actually detected until 2012 in the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, which is crazy, right? They used matrix algebra and predicted that this particle would exist, but they hadn't found it. And then 2012 it did. I think if we build a big enough super collider that's way, way larger than our Large Hadron Collider at CERN, we could find some experimental evidence for string theory.
What would you wager, Sam? What would you wager now you know some techniques?
If I had all the money in the world, honestly, I would wager the amount that it would cost to build this. Do you want to guess?
How much would it take?
22 billion euros to build a super collider that's, you know, it's still in Geneva. It'll go underneath the Alps, which I think is amazing. It'll be kilometers long.
For one little particle.
One extremely little particle, but it's going to help us problem solve things.
such as...
Look, I don't want to answer that question. I refuse.
You plead the fifth?
I plead the fifth.
So if we find evidence of string theory, would the universe say, well, you've found that answer, let's just shut down. Right, bye-bye. No more.
What, like in The Hitchhiker's Guide?
Yes, like in The Hitchhiker's Guide. You answer the question, and then the universe destroys itself. Some people think that's already happened.
Ooh, doomsday. Interesting.
Purple Radio Podcasts. Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.